Once upon a time, there were three writers. They stole a prompt uttered in real life and ran with it. Let's go on to our prompt this week, which is, a random old dude with a chest piece just sent me a friend request. He's only friends with people named Adelik. Bella, where did this prompt come from? Because I'm very scared by it.
I actually got a friend request from a random man. He was quite old, and you know when you kind of get a friend request, you want to check to see if there are any mutual friends, if there's a reason you've been sent this friend request. So I went on his profile and looked through his friends, and all of his friends were named Adelik. Which made me feel quite special, really, because I must have been the first person that he friend requested that wasn't called Adelik. So yeah, maybe he just had a preference for people named Adelik.
I feel like it's going down the alphabet. Like, he's done all the Adeliks now, and then he's going to do all of the Bellas.
He's decided Bellas are next.
We just had a discussion as to what a chess piece actually is, because I assumed a chess piece was some type of, like, armour. So I went with chivalric, and I've now been informed it is, in fact, a tattoo.
Yes, it's a tattoo on the chest. That's what a chess piece is. Or at least in this context.
Yeah, my piece uses the armour. My piece uses the armour too, so I also got very confused. I just don't have enough tattoo knowledge.
Although there's no direct link to the word chest piece, there is probably definitely a character in my piece that has a chest piece, and it's a tattoo, not armour.
Mm. So should we go to your piece then, Bella?
Yeah, we can do, if we want to jump straight in there.
Let's jump into it.
My genre this week was an interesting one. It was essentially, how far can I push it before Izzy has a meltdown? That was my genre this week.
I'm very scared.
And we'll get...
I have not pre-read Bella's piece.
So yeah, the piece is how far, how much can I say without saying it, essentially, and will Izzy be mad at me by the end of it? And I think we'll expand on this whole concept in the Q&A after. Thank you, Kenneth. So, shall we jump straight in there, lads?
Absolutely.
I can't wait.
She says, terrified.
The look in your eye says otherwise. Wendy was a vivid, loud, and mannerless woman with heavy-set shoulders and ugly ankles. She knew this because when she had bought her first pair of saltwater sandals at 16, her mother had told her to take the receipt back to the shop and exchange them for white, knee-high lace-ups. They would make her thighs look darker and older, she had said. She could look crisp and elastic. When she had first started working for Frasco V, he had liked her moonshine booties. He had made latex her shtick, part of her pretty southern act, and the clients liked to call her their space cow gal. She would cover herself in a lotion that smelt like tequila sunrise and tasted of it too. She hadn't been Wendy back then, but someone younger, like a Dolly or Anna May. For a time, she might have been Birdie, back when her bones were made of styrofoam and there weren't little lines around her mouth and eyes. But not anymore. Now Mr. V mostly had her handle the riper commodities, the sweeter, more fleshy fruits. A lot of the girls she had primed recently were smaller and thinner than she had been and could not speak any English. Not that this was a requirement. Still, Wendy taught them the basics because every girl could use a few words or two when taking company in such tenebrous circumstances. Her current disciple was perched at the vanity, applying long strokes of brown eyeliner to dark, slanted eyes. Her legs were a rich bronze and long as willow branches, her hands soft and young. Wendy could smell honeysuckle from across the room. It was an interesting choice, mysterious, just like her name.
Why Adelik?
She asked her, picking at the glitter beneath her nails.
Is it part of an act?
Adelik paused in her paintwork and tilted her head, cat-like.
No,
she said, the sound round and thick.
The last man gave it to me. He likes strong names.
Wendy reached down and tightened the lace on her left boot. It was discoloured, a greyish yellow. She would need to buy a new pair soon.
Well,
she mused.
Mr. Vi is a bit more particular. You might have to forget strong, honey.
I don't mind.
She stood from the vanity and her perfect black hair fell to swing at her waist. Wendy bet it wasn't even a wig. Standards were so high these days that you either had to be natural or incredibly convincing.
The last man was stupid. He had a narrow mind. I was a fifth at the league.
Wendy grinned.
Don't you worry, sugar. Fresco will get you a fresh name. It'll be special and sexy and you'll forget you were called Adelique in no time.
Adelique gave her a sideways look. She appeared to contemplate something. She adjusted her slip, swept hair from her eyes and sat on the vanity stool backwards. Wendy suddenly felt less envious. Even with her boots, she stood several inches shorter. Surrounded by all this fresh meat, she was beginning to feel significantly outgunned.
Wendy,
her gentle apprentice said.
What is your first name?
Wendy's laugh was practiced and she flopped her hand playfully.
Sweet Adelique, I don't even remember. Why should I? It's not my name now.
This was, of course, a lie, but it was better to act irreverent about these things. The trade called for pretend on many occasions, and Adelique appeared satisfied with her answer, if a little melancholic. Wendy cleared her throat. There were more important things.
Listen, honey, we gotta run through some specifics.
She slumped on the bed, crossing her thighs. It scratched a little. She would have to use the razor again tonight.
Mr. V probably ain't your last guy, so I gotta check.
A pause. Then...
Do you know what a safe word is?
I wonder what that piece is about.
Certainly Bella's signature style.
Yes, it's up for interpretation what this piece is about. You can use your imaginations.
I love the way you describe characters. They're such, like, kind of vivid, detailed descriptions, but they don't feel like they've just sort of been stuck in the text. It still flows really well.
Thank you very much. I do try very hard at that because I was told by my tutor in first year that whilst dialogue was more my strength, like exposition wasn't, so I've been trying to improve that over the years.
Is this the same tutor that describes your poetry as white noise?
No, this was actually constructive criticism this time.
Okay.
Because I'm absolutely fine with constructive criticism. It's when the criticism makes no sense and you have no idea how to improve.
But yeah, I really like that, yeah, you've like salted in the story all the way through. I think it's almost better that you haven't explicitly said what's going on because I think you can work it out, and I think that's a lot more rewarding for the reader to see what the story is about and to learn about the characters and learn about their situation as you read, as opposed to having a sentence before saying where they are and what they're doing.
I feel like in this way it could be any genre. It could be realism, it could even be sci-fi, like there's something different happening. You never know. You never know.
Yeah.
It actually reminded me, there's this show that my dad watches, Westworld. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. I think it's where...
I've heard of it, I've not seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but I think it's where robots, there's like a theme park that's kind of like the Wild West, and they essentially have robots play different characters in the Wild West, and you can, like, lots of rich people pay money and pick a storyline so they can play an adventure story time or a romance, and the robots play like different characters, and it's like trying to understand whether these characters are real or not, because they look like real people because they're obviously played by real people in the show, but they're actually androids and they're following a storyline, but the androids themselves feel like their storyline is real, like they've had this like tragic past in the Wild West when in reality the Wild West doesn't even exist. So when I was writing Wendy's character, it kind of reminded me of that kind of storyline in a way, I guess.
I like that.
That is really interesting. It reminds me of, there's at our improv troupe at uni, one of the improvisers, she directed this amazing show where the whole concept is, instead of just having a show where we do a few scenes, the fiction of the show is that she's a mad scientist who has these robots who she's programmed to improvise. And it was really cool because not only did you get to see the little scenes that are really hilarious, but you saw the whole thread, as with each scene the robots managed to process emotions more, and they became more and more self-aware until the final scenes where they ended up taking over. And I thought that was just such a cool concept to have, yeah, robots slowly learning what it is to be human.
It had Brandon in, and I miss Brandon.
I miss Brandon too.
He would have been perfect for Wendy's accent because it's the southern accent.
Yeah. But speaking of sciencey stuff, we're going to segue onto Erin's piece.
I didn't even write a sci-fi this time.
I just use that segue all the time for you, Erin. It's the easiest one.
My genre this week was chivalric. Best way to describe it is knights and stuff. knights and dragons and heroic quests.
Ooh.
So I believe he's playing... Bella is playing Zane, who is a grumpy prophet, and Izzy is playing the queen, because Izzy is a queen.
Of course, yes.
Has everyone got it?
Yes.
Yep.
Fantastic. It was not a stormy night when the prophet came. In the stories the people whispered afterwards, they imagined that lightning cracked over the castle towers and rain soaked its courtyards, as if all of nature heralded his journey to the queen. It was not. Instead, the air was heavy with the humid days of midsummer, and the tendrils of fragrant plants that climbed the old brick smelled sickly sweet in the fading sun. The guards recognized Zane's cloaked hood and limp on sight. He was ushered into a room and asked politely to wait. He was still staring at the unfortunate man who had issued this request when the queen swept in.
"You can leave us,"
she said. The guard turned stiffly on his heel and walked quickly out of the room.
"Must you do that every time?"
"What did I do wrong?"
"You unnerved him."
"I can't help that."
Zane pulled back his hood. The queen had grown used to his strange appearance over the years, and now expected a change every time he arrived. The strange deed he carried out on his travels often took a toll, and he would come with a new scar, or painted runes, or strange malformations that she suspected were the after effects of failed spells. That night, however, was one that shocked her the most. She knew him to be old, perhaps even older than her, but now he appeared to be a young, healthy adult. Her trained eye caught the signs of a glamour quickly, the way the skin was tight rather than smooth, the deep-set eyes in youthful sockets, the teeth that were a little too yellow for the quick, eager smile.
"What is this?"
she asked.
"I have a task to accomplish, and I need some helpers."
"Me?"
"No, your knights. I should be able to keep up with them at this new young age."
"You're not young."
"They won't know that."
The queen put her head in her hands. She had been trained never to show fatigue in the presence of others, but this man tired her more than most.
"Whatever would you need my knights for? You've shown my kingdom enough scorn in the past."
"Not your kingdom, just its people. Except you, of course."
"Why do I have to be the exception?"
Zane leaned forward and lowered his voice.
"The prophecies have spoken of you for many years. When I met you, I understood why. Your father never let me go about my business like you do. I was a danger to him. But to you..."
"To me, you're a friend."
The queen didn't try to hide her exasperation from him. There was never any use.
"I can't send my knights out on a fool's errand, Zane, not even for you."
"It will benefit your kingdom."
"Will it?"
She glanced at the jaw, checking the guard wasn't listening.
"Will it benefit my people, or will it just benefit me in ways I did not ask for?"
"I have helped you many times before. The jewel that brings you wealth..."
"Out of my enemy's pockets. You nearly caused a war."
"The potion of healing..."
"That only healed me from the plague, not any of my people."
Zane curled his fingers round the arm of the chair.
"Don't give your life so little value. The prophecies speak of its importance."
"The lives of my people are infinitely more precious, and that is something I doubt you will ever understand. Good night."
The queen stood and walked to the door. Behind her, Zane flipped up his hood and hurriedly got to his feet.
"I need someone to help me,"
he pleaded.
"Even if it's just one night. That's all I ask."
The queen paused, her hand on the door handle. She could hear the guard outside it shift to stand to attention, anticipating her to walk past him.
If it was one person you needed, and you knew that they would come home, then why didn't you ask me?
She spoke quietly, but Zane frowned as if she had screamed at him.
Your life is too precious to waste on something like this.
And therefore, you will not have any of my knights.
She turned back to face him.
But you can have me. What have the prophecies warned you of that sent you here in this state?
Terrors.
As he spoke, she noted the aged hunched of his shoulders that no spell could reverse.
Terrors that threaten everything we hold dear. I was getting Merlin and Arthur vibes here, just saying.
I know.
Wait, so what's happening in the kingdom? Like, what are the terrors?
I'm thinking, like, end of the world vibes, to be honest.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to put her in danger because the prophecies say she's valuable and her response is just, nope, you can have me, you're having no one. I was laughing doing research this because I was looking up medieval names. And I didn't know that Zane was a medieval name, which I thought was interesting. But also, I came across the name Gavin. Like, Gavin is a medieval name. That's a name I associate so strongly with someone I know called Gavin. So I associate it as a modern name. So that was strange. That was strange to find out.
I just love the idea of the Queen going, "You're right, Gav."
You're right.
It's just a name we associate with modern stuff.
Yeah.
Gavin the Bantasaurus Rex.
I really liked the Queen because when I first read the lines, I was like, oh, I see what Erin's doing. Mean Queen. I'm just going to be really ruthless and then I'm going to go and chop off some people's heads. But then she's actually got a big heart. I didn't expect her to offer herself up on a quest. And also, she just seems bored with court life as well. It seems like something that she hasn't asked for, so she wants to go out on her next adventure. And I really like that trope that it's her doing that.
Did you think I just made a character for you to be mean?
Well, you always make me villains, and I love them every time.
You say this, just so you guys know, listeners, I have played RPGs with Izzy twice, like two different campaigns. She has tried to kill me on both of them.
And never ever play Minecraft with Izzy, because she will kill you over and over and over again.
Okay, so the Minecraft was a strategy because I was the worst at Minecraft until Bella joined. And so when Bella joined the server, she was the worst and I was better, but she was learning. And so the way to stop her from learning and becoming better than me was to hunt her down and kill her.
You didn't give me a chance. I'd never played Minecraft before. And I didn't even get to the point where I could have a stick as a weapon because Izzy would kill me before I could have a stick. Ended up rage quitting and having to start my own server by myself so I could learn how to play Minecraft whilst everyone else was playing alone. Like, oh.
I had a lot of friends that would play Minecraft Hunger Games, but I was so bad at it, I ended up setting up a shop. So basically there was a truce where no one would hurt me, they just come and buy stuff, and then someone came and killed me and raided my shop, and everyone else on the server just went after this one person. To avenge my death, it was wonderful.
That sounds like Izzy's character.
just to clarify, Izzy, you are wonderful.
Thank you. I'm glad that you still like me, even though I've killed you both in many different games.
That's why we like you, Izzy.
Oh, speaking of Izzy, should we go on to Izzy's piece?
Absolutely.
So, my piece... I'm not going to say what the genre is till the end for all of the effects, but more broadly, I have done a screenplay this week because I haven't done a screenplay in a while, and I thought it'd be really nice just to practice it and get back into it. So are you guys ready with the piece?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so fade in, exterior, field, day. Farm buildings cluster around the muddy river at the bottom of a field just outside of Eisendyke. Jerry, a border terrier, follows his nose to the back of a brick wall and then runs back to his owner. Will sweeps his metal detector over the grass. It beeps, so he falls to his knees and digs up a neat square of earth with his trowel. Beneath the earth is a billet, the metal twisted out of shape. Will puts it with the others in his pouch around his waist. Jerry paws at the earth, twitches his ear, then bolts towards the mud.
Jerry! Here, boy, Jerry!
Will's metal detector slams into his knees as he runs after the dog. He perseveres until the pouch in his waist comes loose and the shrapnel spill onto the ground. Will crouches and picks them up with one hand while using the other to hold up the metal detector.
Look what you made me do, boy.
Will brushes the splatters of mud off of his tweed and stands up. The metal detector beeps. Will pokes his trowel in the mud and spots the glint of a wedding ring. A farmer named Eric stands on the bridge over the river, holding Jerry by the collar.
This your dog?
Yeah, sorry.
No worries. I'll tie him up here and you can get him when you're done.
Eric wraps twine around Jerry's collar and secures him to the railings. He picks up the walking stick that leans against the bridge and walks away.
Wait, I think I have something of yours.
Exterior, barn, day. The wedding ring shines as Will polishes it with a cloth. He sits on the bench with Eric as Jerry drinks from a metal bowl.
There you go, bath it in a bit of baking soda and your partner doesn't have to know you lost it.
Don't worry, it's not mine.
Oh, one of the workers then? You should tell them to be more careful. I only found it by accident.
No, I doubt it's theirs. We don't use this field much.
Right.
Cattle prefer it over the river.
Eric takes the ring and turns it over in his rough hands. His wrinkled reflection glares back at him, then morphs into a 12-year-old boy. Begin flashback. Interior. Milking parlour. Day. Milk squirts from the cow's udders as the young Eric, fills up his bucket. His mother pokes his head into the parlour. They're here! Men shout in the distance. Eric runs to the door and his eyes widen. End flashback. Exterior. Barn. Day.
I don't suppose as it's not yours, I could keep it? I'll pay you, of course, and put some posters around in case anyone's looking for it. It'll just be nice to return home with a little more than shrapnel.
I'd like it.
Oh.
You can have a finder's fee.
Don't worry, you found my dog. Call it even?
Thanks.
Will takes a handful of muddy shrapnel from his pouch and pushes it on the table.
I suppose you will want these too?
No.
Will puts them back in his pouch and hands the farmer a business card.
Let me know how much you sell it for. I might be better off.
I'm not selling it.
Will stands up and picks up Jerry's lead.
Then forgive me, but why can't I have it?
Eric looks across the river.
It's not yours.
Whose is it?
Eric puts his weight on his walking stick and stands.
I'll show you.
He walks up the field and Will follows. Begin flashback. Exterior. Field. Day. Hundreds of soldiers walk down the field carrying railway sleepers. A young Eric watches from the outside of the parlour. Rain pelts down and the river bursts its banks. Mud splatters as the young men drop the sleepers by the river. A tank crawls towards the river. Mother hands Eric two buckets of milk. Stop staring.
No, I have to watch them win the war.
Reese laughs and as he attempts to light a cigarette. Mother hurries back into the dairy parlour.
Watch us. Thought you were going to fight.
I'm not old enough.
Bet you're stronger than half of this spot. Come on, show me what you've got.
Reese guards his face with his fist and bends his knees. Eric puts the milk down and jabs at Reese's stomach. Reese picks him up and puts him on the mud. Eric scrambles to stand, knocking a bucket of milk over in the process.
Don't think you're ready to fight tomorrow.
You're going tomorrow?
Yeah, gotta take the river. Make it safe for supplies to come through. Why?
Eric's overalls are soaked through as he looks towards the tanks.
I hoped you'd stay longer.
Why would we do that? We're winning. Just gotta push another 2 months and then we can get back home.
Never mind.
Reese clocks where Eric is staring and laughs.
Come on, I'll show you the tanks.
Reese gestures for the young farmer to follow. The wedding ring glints on his finger. End flashback. Exterior, field, day. The farmer threads twine through the ring and ties it around his neck as he walks. Will reaches the wall at the top of the field as the farmer wheezes behind him.
Do many people search around here?
A few.
I suppose they'll clean this place out then.
Someone found a wristwatch.
Knew I should have come here sooner. I have a friend who restores wristwatches.
Would take a lot to fix this one. It's stuck at 1 o'clock.
Begin flashback. According to Peter's watch, it's 1:45. Reese picks up Eric and puts him on the hull of the tank. Peter climbs into the driver's hatch.
This beats horses.
Spend more than a week cramped in here and you wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I'd take over a horse over this any day.
Maybe that's why the Nazis took our horses.
Mother runs through the soldiers to her son. Eric, get away from that. You're going to get hurt. Mother glares at Peter and Reese. Don't you two have a country to liberate? The young farmer follows his mother towards the barn. He takes one last look at Reese, but can't pick him out from the rest of the soldiers that swarm around the tanks. End flashback. Exterior, field, day. The farmer joins Will at the brick wall and walks around to the other side. Will follows. Jerry sniffs around the poppy wreath propped under the memorial. The farmer traces a finger over the names. Reese Barton, age 23, is at the top. Will removes his tweed hat.
I'm sorry.
Their families visit every year.
What happened?
Begin flashback. Exterior. Milking parlour. Day. The young farmer picks up the buckets he's spilt and throws them into the parlour. His mother grabs his elbow and drags him to the corner of the field, away from eavesdroppers.
Let go!
Not until you can be trusted.
I just wanted to see the tanks.
You are annoying the soldiers.
It was their idea. Let me go back, please.
No.
But the war will be over soon, so I won't get another chance.
I said no.
I'll be careful, I promise.
The explosion comes from the tanks by the river. Mother throws her son to the ground and shields him with her body as a shock wave sweeps across the field. Everything is burning. The trees surrounding the field are fruitless skeletons. The tanks are twisted metal coffins. The soldiers are dead. End flashback. Exterior. Memorial. Day. The farmer bows his head. The inscription on the stone reads, "Due to a tragic accident on the 20th of October, 1944, 41 British and Canadian soldiers lost their lives on these fields. They died for our freedom."
Nitroglycerin.
The kind they used to detonate mines at the start of the war?
Yes. The lesson is, don't store it in jerry cans.
Nitroglycerin was declared unsafe months before this accident.
They didn't get the message. I doubt anyone bothered to send it in the first place.
The farmer takes the ring from his neck.
Are you good with computers? We could try to track down the wife.
There's 41 men here. Is there a way of telling exactly who the ring belongs to?
I suppose not.
Hopefully, whoever she is, she's made her peace with it. Probably remarried by now. Not that that would make it any easier for her.
No, no easier.
The farmer lays the ring on the monument step. The gold reflects the cloudless sky, the cattle moo in the distance, the trees are full of fruit. Fade out. And the genre I used was true story.
Whose true story is this?
This is a relative.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not sure what relative, a few generations up obviously, but he was 23 and he went to the war and it was just the end of the war and he didn't come back.
Oh no.
That's really sad.
Yeah. There's not a lot. It was quite hard to do because there's not a lot of information about what happened online, so I've had to piece together a few things. If I had, I'd really like to develop this piece by doing a lot more research, maybe into what the farmer's life would have been like while occupied and what it would have been like to have the soldiers come through. And also there was a court trial afterwards, but the findings of that trial have been lost. So it'd be really interesting to recover those and see what happened so that there could actually be a proper recounting of the story.
Maybe they're in an archive somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. But it was just quite nice to find what information I can about the explosion at Eisendyke and piece it all together a little bit. And then I just had to fill in the characterisation.
Sorry to completely change the subject, but I had an email during that from birdsaren'treal.com saying that there was new proof uncovered, so it kind of threw me off a little bit as I was reading this incredibly deep, sad piece.
Sorry, what's birdsaren'treal.com?
It's a website that I think it's satire, but it's a website that basically supports this cause of revealing that birds aren't real, that they were all replaced by Ronald Reagan in the 80s by drones that listen in on our conversations.
Right.
So they have merch and everything, and the merch is incredible. I actually own some of their merch. It's very funny. And I got an email saying that there's a video that's been revealed of a QR code on a pigeon.
Okay.
I'm not trying to convert our listeners to the cause, but the birds aren't real.
I'm like pretty sure they are, but sure.
Yeah, no, they are.
When we set up the prompted Instagram, I set it up and then gave the passwords to obviously Erin and Bella. And I then went onto the Instagram and suddenly we were following Birds Aren't Real on Instagram.
Oh, we're not, are we?
Yeah, I followed quite a few conspiracy accounts. I think they're fascinating.
Wait, there's more?
Probably. I think they're fascinating. We had to do a small piece on them in creative writing. We had to write about a conspiracy theory, and the one I picked was Birds Aren't Real, which is why I then got loads of advertisements on my computer for merch. And then I inevitably started following the cause, and I thought it was hilarious. And then I kind of got into other conspiracy theories, so I followed them all on the prompted account. It's good for writing. That's my excuse.
Of course it is.
Yeah. We haven't had conspiracy theory as a genre yet, so that would be really interesting.
Maybe I'll
to
do
just
that
have all
next
of the
week,
evidence
possibly.
Of a random thing.
Bella, yeah. If you can convince me that humans aren't real, I'll be really impressed.
Oh, we're definitely Ooh. Not real. That question of our existence and existential musing, perhaps we should move on to other questions in our Q&A this week.
That was a wonderful segue.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. Yes, we have... This was Erin's idea. A few weeks ago, Erin said, my favourite podcast did a Q&A, we should do one. And I was like, oh yeah, that'll be cool. And we have an incredible amount of questions suddenly.
Thank you so much for responding, guys. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, thanks so much to everyone who's responded. I suppose we'll go straight into it then. So most of the questions are for all of us, so we can answer them together. And there are a few targeted at specific cast members. But the first one is from @wilkie.ds. What are each of you personally working on right now? Should we start with Erin?
Sure. I'm writing a audio drama podcasty thing, which is a sci-fi, which Bella knows about because Bella is in it.
She's the villain.
She's fantastic. It's finished and I'm now doing rewrites, which is mainly taking out lines which are just full of exposition. And taking out the spelling errors from when I was typing very late at night.
It's an awesome, awesome audio play. We'll have to make sure it's linked on the prompted account because it's going to be so good. Erin is a brilliant writer.
Thanks, Bella. You're amazing.
Aw. Wholesome. Izzy, I hate you.
What are you working... I was going to ask you what you're working
Izzy
on.
This episode?
Because she senses me, Erin, I have a good reason for it. What are you working on, Izzy?
You cannot say it. Oh, fine. It's currently term three, so we are all working on lots of assignments. But other than that, me and Erin and a group are actually working on a project which is in the early stages. It is called the Trial Project, and basically... We've been sent from a department in Warwick. We've been sent a load of monologues, and we have to stitch them together into this one trial and write a play. So I'm really excited to get properly working on that. What are you working on, Bella?
Similarly, lots of assignments. But my main thing at the moment, and I'm kind of working on it for an assignment, but I'm also planning to expand it into a much larger thing, is I am trying to get better at characterizing women. As it was mentioned in another episode, I think, I'm supposedly quite good at capturing the male essence. And I thought to myself that I should probably get better at writing women. Thanks, Mum. Thanks,
Mum. We have food delivered straight to the studio.
Food delivered straight to the studio. I think she's trying to keep me hydrated because it's hot. I was just like, no. Okay. I'm trying to get better at characterising women. And I think because before, when I was trying to characterise women, I was going for sort of what I think are expected of women in society, and I don't know why, and it was just feeling off for me. And I've decided to completely break out of that and write a woman who is the opposite of what is expected of her, and I love her and she's amazing, and I feel far more, she's far more relatable to me than the women I've written in the past, and I feel like she portrays the female better than I have before. And I kind of wanted to turn it into a speculative fiction that was kind of like, because speculative fiction is where everything is the same in our current world, but there's some very important differences. And one of the important differences I was kind of going to go for is that a lot of the things that are expected of women are brought to the extreme. So one of the things would be having no body hair, for example. I kind of wanted to make it the extreme that it was almost politically unacceptable to have body hair, which was one example of something I wanted to write about. Anyway, that's what I'm working on.
That's really cool. So that's what we're all working on. Mm-hmm. The next question is from @Nahal Writes, and she asks, how do you come up with the prompts?
Bella comes up with most of them, and they're just Bella's life.
I get very, very drunk on wine. And then I tend to say some ridiculous things. And that's some of the prompts that are produced. The ones that are produced by me are usually a result of lots of wine and dancing and stupidity.
Yeah. All our prompts are original to the show, but they're all stolen from conversations. Because if you nick something from a conversation, it already has a character behind it and their specific choices of words and stuff. And you also get to take the mick out of your friends who's just said a really stupid thing. So that's where our prompts come from. We, on our group chat, as soon as someone says something, even the tiniest bit stupid or weird, we just, boom, shove it on our prompted group chat.
Improv practice is very good for that as well.
What was the thing that Callie said the other night that was absolutely hilarious that we might use?
Oh, yeah.
Was it, I am essentially the welfare state for my gecko?
Yes, that was it.
That was brilliant.
That's a good one.
A great prompt. The next question is, what made you want to start the podcast? This is also from @Nahal Writes.
Izzy, you take this one because this is your baby.
Yeah, so the podcast. So I was speaking to a writer friend, and she kind of made me realise that there's so many opportunities at uni, and because writing is something that I really want to go into as a job, like I really want to convert it from a hobby to a job, she said that I need to, in order to do that, I need to take advantage of all of the opportunities at university. And so I looked at, we've got a great radio station at uni, and I've also got some of my best friends happen to be amazing writers. And so I thought that I would, the two ideas sort of came together, and I thought that I'd do a writing radio show. Then I had a shower, and in the shower, my shower thoughts came together. So prompted is mostly a shower thought, and I just really excitedly messaged Bella and Erin saying, do you guys want to do it? And they both went, yeah.
It's been very fun.
It's the best shower thought I've ever had, I think.
Incredible shower thought, absolutely.
the next question is, when did you start the podcast?
It was Christmas holidays, I think.
Yeah, it was. I think our first episode was the day before my birthday, so it would have been early January.
I know that we had to send a submission off at Christmas, and I remember that the submission was sent off, I think it was 20 minutes before it was due to be in. If yeah. I'm remembering that right.
Yeah, I came up with the idea fairly late, so we didn't have a lot of time to get the application together, and it happened to be the day before the deadline, and I was hanging out with all my friends. I think Bella was also with friends. Erin was at a sleepover.
No, yeah, but I was also with friends.
But Erin's friends, she can't have other friends than us, so she has to write the application it prompted.
I wrote the application the morning before my friends came round, so it wasn't like I ignored my friends entirely. It was like, guys, okay. I've got to go on the laptop for 10 minutes, copy and paste something over, and send it at like 20 minutes to midnight. It was very intense.
That's like when Izzy had me write our nomination for the awards whilst drunk after the pantomime and hours before the deadline.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, we have received 3 awards, and we realised that there was the applications for the awards. This is the Student Radio Awards. Raw, which is our host radio, they have awards for their shows, and we had to apply for them. And I think it was a time where we all had quite a few deadlines. So I think I was like, right, I'm going to cut extracts of our podcast to submit to the awards. And that took so long, and it was the day of the deadline. And Bella had had some wine, and I just shoved Bella the computer and said, can you describe it?
We were both in a pantomime. And I was playing Dionysus, so obviously I'd had a whole bottle of wine during the show. Mm-hmm. And then I think I wrote some of my best work for the nomination.
Drink responsibly, everyone.
I mean, it worked. We got awards.
Drink responsibly. You know, if you're Dionysus, that is drinking responsibly. Okay, like, I don't have any defence.
I reckon have we got time for one more question before we have to wrap this up?
Yeah, let's go on to... So, the next question is, how do you prepare before recording?
Send to Bella.
Sorry? All right. So, it tends to go that we all set up our computers to record. We call on our phones and then have microphones attached to our computers. We figure out what order we're going to go in. We figure out what characters we're going to play. Izzy checks over my piece and censors me. And then we begin.
No.
There's also, if we're recording in the studio, like, me and Bella don't quite know what we're doing in the Raw studio. So, like, if we have to wait for Izzy to come and sort out the recording process. We have to pre-fade mics, which is just all of us shouting gibberish into a microphone while Izzy fixes it. The notebook invariably gets lost. I don't remember an episode where the prompted notebook has not got lost 2 minutes to air. But we find it in time.
I bought Izzy one of her prompted notebooks, so it's nice to know that she appreciates this present enough to lose it on a regular basis.
Thanks, Bella. But me and Bella have a sort of matching notebooks for prompted.
Yes, I got a very pretty little notebook from my friend Charlie, who also knitted me some socks, which was adorable because it was my birthday on Monday. So I opened this all on Monday, and it's a little sketch. Not that you can see. I don't know why I'm showing the others through the camera, but it's like a little notebook that's got prompted on it, and I also got a mug with sunflowers on it because that's my little tag on the Instagram. We all have a little tag at the end of our names, and mine is a sunflower. So I expect you two to have mugs with your tags on by next episode.
My symbol on the Instagram is the Vulcan salute, and I have a Star Trek mug. Does that count?
Yes. Izzy, where's yours?
Okay, wonderful.
So I need to catch up, then. I need to get a little music note mug.
Yeah. And then we can all do a photo in the FaceTime camera with us with the mugs, and we'll just look really aesthetic.
Promotional materials are being planned.
Yes, on air.
Thank you for sending in all those questions that Nahal writes. We will get on to the rest of them another episode, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have to keep working through the next episode because there are loads of great questions and I'm looking forward to writing them all, to answering them all.
Please send in more if you have them.
The prompt next week is, "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to get eaten by these amusingly hungry hippos."
Interesting.
It is a crazy prompt.
The person who said this, because I suggested it, they have a very deep voice. And Izzy, I think you just got that spot on.
That is beautiful. So yeah, so that's, I'm excited to get started on that prompt. And it's, we all better go. So I just want to say thank you so much to this week's prompt provider, which is Bella's Crazy Life.
Yay!
And I'm going to say thank you so much to the writers of the show. It's been really cool. Thank you so much to everyone who has sent in questions to us. That's been amazing. We promise we will get through all of the questions in episodes to come. Thank you so much to you guys for listening. For more prompts and writing, go to our Instagram at Prompted Writing Podcast. If you want writing advice or you want to share your responses to any of our prompts, please DM us. We're also offering all of our prompts, so if you need a little bit of inspiration, just DM us and you can respond to one of our prompts. You can find us on Anchor FM, which distributes us to Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and many more. And thanks again to everyone for listening. Goodbye.
Would you like me to sing us out?
Oh, please.
Yes,
do
an outro.
We're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I. There you go.
That was wonderful. Bye, everybody.
Beautiful. Bye.